Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. This guy's Lance Meadow. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Not a whole lot of news in Giants land over the last few days. Pat Shurmur still putting together his assistant coaching staff. I imagine it will not be completed until after the Super Bowl if he decides to take some players, or coaches rather, off of the Eagles coaching staff
or
the Patriots.
Retire, yeah.
Things like that. And, you know, because he was on the Eagles coaching staff, he is familiar with some of the guys from there, or Patriots or someone else. Who knows? So hopefully we'll have that done next week. But, Lance, a lot of news this week in the NFL for sure. Let's start with some of the news yesterday, and we have a lot of stuff to get to. Roger Goodell's press conference, let's touch on that first. I thought the one really interesting thing that he said is that rather than tweaking the current catch rule that everyone seems to hate and claim not to understand, even though they really secretly do, they're going to kind of take a look at the rule from scratch and maybe approach it in a different way, which I think is what a lot of people want, but I also think it's a little risky and a little bit dangerous to maybe give the officials a little bit more discretion in what's a catch from crew to crew, because I think you might get some more inconsistencies that way. And I think if you're going to remove that thick red line, which is controlling the ball through hitting the ground,
surviving the ground,
you're going to have to leave it up to some interpretation, which can be dangerous because then you have an individual making a judgment call on every single catch.
Which is essentially a part of the process right now where you have individuals interpreting things. Personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with the rule. I mean, I think that it's fine if they have conversation, and you should always reevaluate things and take a different look at them and see what happened during the course of the season. But as far as the language of the rule, John, I think it's very clear. You and I have had multiple conversations about this. You know, we went over this with the Sterling Shepard play last season against the Eagles, and I thought that was the right call. And, you know, what I'm hearing from a lot of fans on various programs is, you know, they disagree with a lot of the calls because they just don't like the rule. But there's a distinct difference between the rule being interpreted correctly and carried out correctly,
correct,
John, versus it not being a good rule. Those are two different things. I think the language is fine, and personally, I think the rule is fine. It's just a matter of fans don't like it when it goes against their team.
Well, I think that's true. I do think sometimes maybe the rule might turn plays that I would think, in a vacuum, just looking at it, I would consider a catch, and they call it incomplete.
Borderline plays, no doubt. Yeah.
For example, I mean, you go back, you know, the Calvin Johnson play. I think the Dez Bryant play down the sideline. You
those
can go through all these plays where, yeah, the guy catches the ball, he kind of stumbles, and then he hits the ground, and then the ball comes out. Even though it was pretty clear, he had caught the ball and had full control of it. So
yeah.
I understand fans wanting those plays that look like a catch to end up being a catch. The trick is, how do you put the language in there to differentiate those plays from the plays that really should be called incomplete? And that's the real trick here.
100% with you. I mean, I understand they're borderline calls, but try to define that.
it's impossible, and that's the problem.
What are you supposed to do? Well, you know, how you look at it and come up with an answer. Flip a coin, why don't you? I mean, that's why I'm saying right now I think is the compromise where you at least have some language that the officials can apply when they are reviewing the film as well as the league office, which is involved. And, I mean, once again, I just don't know what else they're going to do. I get what Roger Goodell said, and I think at the end of the day, John, I think part of it is the appeasement to the NFL fan base.
Well, the fan's mad about it, so of course he wants to make them think that they're we're going to review it and try to fix
it. Without a doubt, and that's why I keep going back to, I mean, listen, my philosophy in life is the court of public opinion you're never going to satisfy. So while it's great to come out, stand in front of a microphone at a podium and say this and say that, no matter what you do, they could sit down and have an entire symposium for the next 3 months going back and forth with the language, and they will still not please everybody, because then once week one comes around, John, and they start implementing the rules, there's going to be somebody that has an issue. So at the end of the day, it's not going to solve anything. That's why I think you do everything you can to have conversations with the competition committee. What works, what didn't, maybe tweak the language here or there. But right now, I think it's fine. I don't have a major issue with
it. Is that really your life philosophy?
the court of public opinion?
I thought your life philosophy was that Michael Jordan was the greatest human being to ever walk the planet.
That is the second time, by the way, that Michael Jordan has been brought up on this program. You have brought it up, and Paul DeTino has brought it up. Congratulations, the two of you. You have a nice agenda and a narrative going here.
The reason we bring it up is because your Twitter feed is like 20% sarcastic Jordan tweets.
Well, at least my sarcasm is coming over, according to you. My sarcasm radar, at least, so.
I hope my sarcasm came through there. A couple other things I want to touch on. It is the 10th anniversary of the David Tyree catch and the Giants defeating the Patriots in Super Bowl 42. Obviously, you want to call and talk about your memories of that game. That's great. I kind of want to go back and watch the game. I might do that either at some point today or tomorrow.
You're telling
and
me
watch
you haven't
it,
watched it enough?
And watch it all the way through. I've seen the highlights a bajillion times, but have I watched the game from beginning to end? Probably not in a few years. So I might sit down and do that. And, you know, it was an unbelievable game, and I think, and I'll use this to transition, and you can go to Giants.com, by the way. All the 10th anniversary stuff is up there. Where Are They Now pieces with some of the Giant players that were on that 2007 Super Bowl team is up there. Make sure you check it out. And I know this is a very cliche thing to say, but I think in this case it really is kind of true. I think past Giants Super Bowls are really a good guide for the Eagles in this game, and here's why. One, the backup quarterback angle with Foles and Hostetler.
Yep.
Going up against a high-powered offense, much like the Bills were in 1990. You have the Tom Brady and the Pats now. That's one. You have a backup quarterback going, run the football, and then hit the quarterback. And that goes back to the 2007 Super Bowl where, Eli Manning got the MVP, but – frankly, watching that game, I thought Justin Tuck should have gotten the MVP in that game. I thought the defense was so dominant to hold what could be the best offense in the history of the National Football League to under 20 points. I felt like a defensive player deserved the MVP in that game. And Eli Manning really didn't do anything in that game until the fourth quarter. If you take a look at the numbers, which is fine, he did in the most important quarter. But to me, that's the formula for the Eagles. Can you get enough out of your backup quarterback? And then can you pressure Tom Brady and hold the Patriots to under the 24 points or under? And that's the whole key to this game. That's the kit and caboodle.
I'd also throw in the Denver Broncos if you want to take it outside of the Super Bowl, because Denver also had success against New England in the AFC Championship game, John. To your point, getting to the quarterback, winning the battle in the trenches, running the football. So if you're Philadelphia, you're looking at the Giants and the Broncos. You're looking at their game plan, and you feel good because you have similar personnel.
Hell, I'm going to take it back a step further. How did the Falcons get the big lead against the Patriots in last year's Super Bowl? Their pass rush was all over Tom Brady. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter when their defensive line got tired and they couldn't get pressure anymore, that's when the Patriots came back. So, look, it's no secret. You beat the great port quarterback by putting him on his rear end, getting there without blitzing, and that's what the Eagles are going to have to do.
What I like about the Philadelphia defense is, similar to the Giants, Jim Schwartz can rotate so many defensive linemen, John, and that's exactly what Spags did with the defensive linemen. Look at Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, Chris Long,
Barnett.
We named, what, six or seven guys right there. So, Jim Schwartz can mix and match all game long. You know, you'd be stunned if Philadelphia gets into a position where those defensive linemen are tiring. Even if New England puts together lengthy drives, you figure if you're Jim Schwartz, you keep those guys fresh. Mm-hmm. You just hope that your secondary meets the defensive line halfway. But Philadelphia's got the guys in the trenches that they have what it takes to get to Tom Brady, at least fluster him.
Bill Barnwell, I thought. I'm not sure if you've read it yet. He put up a great Super Bowl preview. He has it linked off his Twitter feed. And, he's usually a big stats guy, but he actually did a lot of X's and O's in this thing. And believe it or not, one of his keys to the Super Bowl for the Patriots were to copy what the Giants did to the Eagles this year. Because if you took a look at the two games the Giants played against the Eagles defense, those are two of the worst games for the Eagles defense all year long, believe it or not. And he had two keys. One, the tight end, Evan Ingram, played well in both those games for one. Number two, or I think it might have just been the first game that Evan Ingram played well. He might have been injured in the second one. I have to look that up and check it out.
Check that, yeah.
Number two, the Giants ran no huddle more in that game, in those two games, than any other team ran against the Eagles all year long. And that prevented what you're talking about, Lance, the rotation and substitution of the defensive linemen. And he talked about it. During the year, I think Brandon Graham played 60-something percent of their snaps. Fletcher Cox played 58% of the snaps. Now, in the playoffs, that's gone up into the 70-80% area. But you still want to keep these guys fresh and move guys in and out. If you're playing that no-huddle offense, the other team can't substitute. And that doesn't mean you have to snap the ball with, you know, 25 seconds left on the play clock. Just get to the line quickly.
Yeah.
Because once you're at the line, the other team can't start shuffling personnel. You know, get to the line, then, you know, Foles can make his calls and hold it and wait and do whatever. Or rather, Brady can get to the line, hold it and wait. But then the Eagles can't substitute. And that takes away, I think, one of their better strengths. So I think the no huddle for the Patriots could be big in this game, as Barnwell pointed out. And how did the Eagles handle Gronkowski? That was one of their issues all year long. One of their big strategies is putting Malcolm Jenkins on the tight end.
It's their best safety.
But no one can cover Rob Gronkowski one-on-one. You can't. It's just impossible. So how do they handle that? To me, defensively, those are the two big factors that the Patriots could try to take advantage of. And the other interesting thing he had in there is, historically, the Patriots team with Brady and Belichick against Jim Schwartz have performed exceptionally well against his defenses.
That is interesting.
When you have a second, go look at the article.
It'll take you about, he was with Buffalo and Detroit, too.
It'll take you about 15 to 20 minutes to read it. It's a long article. Really good stuff in there, and I encourage the fans that are reading
it. Oh, definitely check it out. First of all, Evan Engram did play in that second match against Philadelphia. I just confirmed that.
8 for 87, a good game, right?
He did, and then Sterling Shepard obviously had two monster games against the Philadelphia Eagles. The other thing that jumps out to me that the Giants did, specifically Shepard, the double move. Ate that secondary alive.
And Tavares King had a great double move against them,
too. Oh, boy, yes, everybody. They just ran the double move, and then the secondary was completely lost. I'm sure Bill Belichick picked that up, and they're going to try to test the Eagles secondary on that front. And, you know, that's why the secondary has to meet the defensive line at least halfway, because in the event that Jim Schwartz's front seven does not get to the quarterback, to your point, Brady can have a field day, because it's not so much Gronk. He's got enough wide receivers that they can mix and match. I mean, think about Danny Amendola's capable of making big plays. You know, they got Brandon Cooks this year after they acquired him from the Saints. They've got so many other different weapons, the running backs that they move around. It's going to put a lot of pressure on that Philadelphia defense. That's why the pass rush, it goes without saying, is going to be so important to not just necessarily make key opportunistic plays, but it goes back to what Spags' philosophy was in 07, hit Brady. Just hit him so that he starts to second-guess himself. And, you know, we saw that in the Jacksonville game, John. There were times where he had time, and he still was anticipating the pass rush. He did that against the Giants in 07, too. That's what you want him to feel. Can they do that effectively?
And the other thing that works in the Eagles' favor, you know, you talk about their pass rush, it's great. Well, do you know why the pass rush is so great? They're one of the best run defenses in the league. Teams cannot run on Philadelphia.
They were number one in the NFL.
I think New England's really going to struggle.
That's a good point.
Against them running the ball. I think Brady could throw 50 passes in this game, to be honest with you. Now, it's not going to be 50 passes for 500 yards. I think there's going to be a lot of short stuff. Like you mentioned, a lot of slants, which is what the Giants use a lot against the Eagles in that second matchup. So, all things to keep an eye on. Another topic real quick. You guys had a chance yesterday to talk about the Alex Smith and Kirk Cousins trade. I think it was a mistake for the Washington Redskins to move on from a 29-year-old in Kirk Cousins, who put up almost identical numbers to Alex Smith over the last 3 years, if you look at their stats, but is 5 years younger. And on top of that, in order to acquire the older quarterback, you have to give up a third-round pick and one of the best slot corners in football.
Kendall Fuller.
So I'm not quite sure how the Redskins got better because of this move. I understand if they made an organizational decision, we don't want to pay Kirk Cousins, and I get that. You know, paying a guy $30 million a year, which is probably what he's going to get, is a big commitment. And I understand if you're going to let him go, Alex Smith is a great guy to plug in to replace him. He's the next best quarterback on the market after Kirk Cousins. No question about that either. But why give something up to get an older version of a player that you know and has been on your roster that is only going to make slightly more than the guy you just traded for and gave up assets for? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, and you figure it's better to invest in the younger option.
Of course.
And then you have stability moving forward. Whereas, listen, Alex Smith is in his mid-30s. They gave him a four-year extension. I still think he could play solid football into his late 30s, even pressing 40. We've seen it happen with a number of quarterbacks. And I agree with you because I think Alex Smith is very good, like Kirk Cousins, in protecting the football. I think he can run Jay Gruden's offense very smoothly. They did ultimately have to sacrifice some additional talent. On the flip side, they save money at the quarterback position. So
not
you, know, you
ton,
weigh
though.
The pros and cons.
Not a ton of money.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm looking at it maybe not necessarily in terms of all the guaranteed money because
right.
he's getting, what, just over $70 million guaranteed, Alex Smith. I guess I'm looking at it more of the longevity
what
of the
contract.
What was
it, $494? Is that what the extension
I
was
think
for?
It was in that ballpark.
Something like
yeah,
that?
Whereas,
mm-hmm.
you know, Kirk was going to get something.
Six for 180.
Yeah, I mean, we're
Whatever.
Talking about nearly $200 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's what the Redskins were thinking, but then again, like all these quarterback contracts, you give them the deal this year, and then 5 years down the road, you restructure it, and things change. It's very
yeah.
fluid. The cap is always very fluid. This is why I say, you know, don't get invested in how much cap space a team has right now. Things are going to drastically change, once we get to March. But what baffles me is you invested in Kirk Cousins with the franchise tag over the last 2 years. You know, and now all of a sudden to bail on him after you were willing to throw all that money, I just, that's what I don't understand. You know, you could have just parted ways with him if you never really were serious about locking him up long term and maybe
Hell.
Even gone to the Chiefs and tried to acquire Alex Smith sooner.
Or trade Kirk Cousins for assets.
Assets.
You get something for him.
Yeah.
You just let the best free agent quarterback coming out in
gift.
His prime since Drew Brees walk away for nothing.
Some team is getting an absolute gift because we always talk about it, and this relates to the Giants, John. You know, we have the debates about it. The number two overall pick, do you take a quarterback? And, you know, my argument is, well, there's other ways to acquire a quarterback. Free agency, trades, it's possible. Maybe rare, but it's possible. Well, here's a rare occurrence now on the free agent market. Where do you get a guy in his prime who's, to me, easily a top 15 quarterback in the NFL. Half the teams in the NFL would take Kirk Cousins right
now. Maybe even top 12.
I don't think that's a stretch either. And I'll go back and forth with any fan that wants to call up. I've been a huge Kirk Cousins supporter. I think he's a great quarterback. I would take him on my team in a heartbeat. So this is going to be an absolute gem that a team that's needy for a quarterback is now going to have an opportunity to throw a lot of cash his way. He's going to have his fair share of suitors. He deserves it. And if I'm John Elway, that's probably the first phone call I'm making once free agency starts.
If I'm the Minnesota Vikings, that's the first call I'm making. Well, they don't have a quarterback on the contract.
That's a fair point, too. I mean, unless they just love one of the three options that they Maybe. Have had an opportunity to evaluate. Let's put it this way. If I'm Minnesota versus Denver, John, I feel a lot better about some of my internal options than I do if I'm the Denver Broncos.
Well, in theory, though, the Vikings right now don't have any internal options because no one's
well,
under contract.
Well, because no one's under contract.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm willing to think about re-signing one
you
of
You have
my
more
three.
Faith in, say, a Keenum than in a Simeon or a
Exactly.
Finley.
So that's my only difference.
And here's the other thing, too, Lance. Some of these teams have stockpiled so much cap space over the last couple of years because the way the new system works, guys, and we'll see if, you know, when they have a new CBA at 2021, I think, is when the current one is up. When they made the last agreement, teams, if they don't go up to the salary cap, can carry that space over to the following year. So there are teams now, and I think the Jets and the Browns have the most. They have, like, literally almost $100 million of cap space. So while for some teams, $30 million up front on a cap might kill you, guess what? If the Jets and Browns tried, they couldn't use up all their cap space this year. It's impossible. There aren't enough good players out there to spend $100 million in an offseason. So it really doesn't even hurt them a lot to financially, in terms of the cap at least, to give Kirk Cousins that type of contract. Now, it'll be tougher for a team like the Broncos and the Vikings, who are paying guys money on the defensive side of the ball,
yeah.
to fit him in their salary structure. It's a little bit tougher. But for a team like the Jets and the Browns, and again, I don't know if either team is going to be interested in Cousins. Would they rather try to draft a quarterback with their pick high in the first round? Who knows? But they have the wherewithal with the cap in order to make that type of move and for it not to really hurt them or hamstring anything else they're trying to do.
Well, and Cleveland, I thought, has done a nice job over the last few years bringing in draft picks where now if you do want to invest in a quarterback, it makes sense because there's talent there.
With a veteran offensive line, by the way.
Exactly. So Cleveland is not necessarily a place that you want to shy away from anymore. I think there's some appealing factors, plus John Dorsey's there as the new general manager.
I think you need a few more skill position guys.
Well, if I'm Kirk Cousins and I'm seeing Corey Coleman and Josh Gordon.
Now, Coleman hasn't stayed healthy, and, you know, Josh Gordon is a big question.
He is, but if those two guys, if John Dorsey feels that he can build around those two, they got David Njoku.
And they wanted to sign a veteran wide receiver.
Correct. So, I mean, who's to say that they don't add to that receiving core? I don't think it's necessarily a laughing option if you're Kirk Cousins.
I think you would worry about the seemingly lack of organizational stability. I was trying to put that the nicest way possible.
Be politically correct under the circumstances. Yes.
You know, they've had a lot of changes there over the years, and I think that's something you would probably worry about if you're a quarterback. And the Bills is another team that's been mentioned as a team that's going to have cap space and it might decide to make a move for him. Obviously, the 49ers now, if they re-sign Garoppolo, that's probably not going to be an option.
Well, it's interesting, though, speaking of the Niners, I didn't mean to cut you off. Kyle Shanahan now, you got Kirk and you got Jimmy Garoppolo. You got two guys that you're connected to.
And you figure Garoppolo will be a little bit cheaper, right?
You would assume because Kirk's got much more substance behind his resume. He's been doing it for a lot longer.
And the other piece of quarterback news, and a lot of people have mentioned the Jaguars as a landing place for quarterbacks.
With Blake Bortles, who's still under contract, though, by the way.
Well, here's the interesting
thing. People are treating him like he's a free agent.
Well, I'm not sure if you read the story that came out yesterday. Maybe you missed it. So when they right now, they have him on his fifth-year option for $19 million or $18 million, whatever it is. But it's not that fifth-year option is not guaranteed, except for injury.
So they have the flexibility.
Did you see the story yesterday?
That I didn't see the story. I mean, I knew it was the fifth-year option.
Blake
I didn't know the
Bortles
specifics of the fifth-year option.
Underwent wrist surgery. He was playing with it, apparently, since the end of the 2016 season.
So basically
if
now,
he cannot pass a physical at the start of the league year, the Jaguars have to pay him $18 million.
Wow. So that does
change. How about that?
Yeah, but here's the thing. If I'm Jacksonville, you got to be careful because even if you really like Kirk Cousins, which I wouldn't blame them, you can't all of a sudden put all the marbles in the bank there for Kirk Cousins and then he turns around and chooses another team and then you're screwed with Blake Bortles as well. Who are you turning to?
Well, apparently Blake Bortles is going to be there next year now.
Well,
he ain't going anywhere.
but I guess the last thing you want to do is create a rift with your quarterback and all those other things.
I mean, you can send your offer in, and then if he, you know, just don't publicize it. Just send your offer in. If he says yes,
that's
great.
There. I just wouldn't mess around with the ins and outs of Blake Bortles' contract, I guess is what I'm saying. Because I think Blake has done enough that if you give him support, you can still be a competitive team.
You can be a competitive team, but I think it's very difficult to win a Super Bowl.
If I am Jacksonville, would I go after Kirk Cousins? Yes, but I also need to keep my expectations in check.
I guess,
what the philosophy has to be if you're the Jaguars.
All right, folks, everything's on the table. We touched on four or five different topics. You name it. Give us a call. We'll talk about it. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Travis in Queens will lead us off. Hi, Travis.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Doing well. What's up?
Good, Lance. I went back and I listened.
So I'm glad to hear that, Travis.
Show.
Yes. Well,
to what?
Did not listen to Monday and Tuesday show. Called up Wednesday blindly, asked two random questions, hoping that we had not answered them on Monday or Tuesday's program.
I heard Monday's show was terrible. That's just me, though.
Well, that goes without saying. You don't need to affirm that. I can confirm Monday's show was terrible. I don't need you to confirm it.
I'm just kidding. What's
but
up,
yes,
Travis?
He brought his A game yesterday.
Nice.
Asked two really good questions. So. Now, this is big shoes here, Travis.
This is now
back-to-back days.
Anybody can do it
expectations
once.
Expectations are high.
Anybody can do it once. Right. To do it twice is tough.
Yeah.
I know. So I'm going to play it safe, right? So, look, my question is, a caller called yesterday, and you was, like, going into, like, the draft, and you was speaking about, like, value. Like, so can you elaborate more on that? Because I think it was a situation you guys were saying how, like, you know, Dave Gettleman, he doesn't reach in the draft, you and Paul, and, like, you know, he doesn't, like he values.
Well, I think what I was talking about is, and listen, a lot of callers have brought up hypotheticals over the last few weeks, but my point is that if you're choosing number two overall, and the argument is, well, the Giants can use an offensive lineman, perhaps a left tackle. If you don't think that there's a left tackle in this year's draft that is valued at the number two overall pick, meaning he's not the number two best prospect in the field, you go after a left tackle, then what you're doing is you're reaching and you're basically saying, well, we have a need, So we pick number two. Let's pick a left tackle versus you're leaving other great talent off the board simply to appease to the
and
need.
Travis,
and that's what I wouldn't do.
And Travis, if you would hold on one moment, I have a great quote.
No
Dave Gettleman was talking to me and Dan Salamone, who's running the phones today, out at the Combine in
he
the Senior Bowl.
He regrets that conversation, by the way,
and,
but anyway.
Oh, he had a great time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
highlight of his life.
And here's what Dave Gettleman said to us. Here we go. With the second pick, we're going to take the best player. They screamed at me in Carolina, you've got to draft a tackle. You've got to draft a tackle. If the value's not there when you pick, you're going to make a mistake. You'll make a mistake. We're going to get we're going to set ourselves up so that we could take the best available player, and if the best available player is a quarterback, then that's what we're going to do. Period. So they will trust their board and take the best player. And he mentioned another story too when he was there, the summer of when he let Josh Naaman go as a
yes.
The way he put it at the combine, he goes, and everyone said, you have to draft a cornerback. You have to get a cornerback. And he said, look, we didn't force it early. We got a couple guys later in the draft when we thought the value was good, and that's when we picked them. So you can't go past what you think the value is.
Okay, so with that being said, has he ever traded up or down? Like,
yes. He's made a number of trades.
Both up and down.
Oh, okay. So because I heard you guys mention yesterday as well that he never drafted a offensive lineman in the first round.
Correct. I went through on yesterday's program. No, you're right, Travis. I went through every single year from 13 to 17 for the Panthers drafts.
Right.
And if you look, an offensive lineman was never taken in the first round, never lower than the fourth round. And he did quite well with a number of his mid-round offensive lineman selections. We're talking about some Pro Bowlers, some All Pros, even an undrafted guy, Andrew Norwell, who we were talking about yesterday as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was my point. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to follow the same exact philosophy with the Giants. It just goes to show you that just because there may be a need on paper. Now, granted, the needs also could look very differently when we get to the draft because free agency will have finished up by then. But that doesn't mean that you have the number two overall pick. You should just take an offensive lineman just because the court of public opinion
or any position
is calling for that position. Yeah.
All right. So, and then with that being said, right, like you take the Giants now, like, you know, and I also think like Webb would be best fit for Eli's replacement for the fact that, you know, Webb coming behind Eli, he would have everything, you know, in place, assuming that, you know, the line is dressed in the draft and free agency and maybe, you know, that second pick, if it's not Saquon, you trade down to you and you get some offensive linemen. It's hard. You have to be a very horrible quarterback to mess, you know what I mean, a good thing up like that, you know? So I think Webb, like, you know, when you go after, I think, like you know, like a Rosen or Matt Barkley or Josh Allen, you know, those, like when you want a first pick type of quarterback, that's a lot, because meaning to say, like, you know, on their plate, whereas they have to do so much. But Webb, you know, he's coming into a great position as far as, you know, you got your Odell, your O-line.
Well, again, Travis, we don't know that yet. We don't know what the situation's going to be. You hope that's the case, but, you know, we have to wait a couple years to see if that's going to, in fact, be the case or not.
Yeah, it's hard to speculate at this point.
Thanks for the call, Travis. Appreciate it.
You can't assume, Travis, and thanks for weighing in, is, you know, even if Dave Gettleman addresses the offensive line, John, this offseason, whether it be a combination of free agency and the draft, how long are all of these contracts that are going to be issued? So, by the time Eli hangs it up, and let's say Eli plays another 2 to 3 years, I'm just giving a hypothetical, 2 to 3 years removed from now, guys could be free agents again. Who's to say that the way the offensive line looks in 18 is my point, is the way that it's going to look in 2021 or something like that.
And Dave Gettleman did make the point, by the way, another thing he said at the combine, which I thought, and it's funny, he's saying a lot of the same things we've said on this show over the years, and I'm like, wow, the GM's busy. You know, Dave Gettleman, obviously a little bit more verbose than Jerry Reese was. He gives more, you know, longer, complete answers. And he made the point that in free agency, you try to do – you're working free agency, so when you get to the draft, you don't have to do anything.
And you could pick the best player available.
Exactly. The last thing you want to do when you're getting to the draft is be backed into a corner where you need somebody at a certain position. That's when you make mistakes. And he talked about Davis Webb. Travis, real quick, Lance, here's another quote from Gettleman at the Senior Bowl, referencing the question about whether or not you select a quarterback second overall. But it's more of a comment on getting the quarterback question wrong. And here was his answer. If you take a guy just to take a guy, especially a quarterback, and he fails, you set yourself back 5 years. You set yourself back 5 years because there are teams that are in what we call quarterback hell. They've got quality defense, they've got a good special teams, and they're going 7-9 or 8-8 or 9-7. And now if there's a legitimate guy, they've got to trade up and give away the farm to get that guy. Which is why if you're going to do the quarterback thing, you damn well better sure get it right, or you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
And you hope that everybody's on the same page within your scouting department, which is what we talked about, too. I mean, if you're going to take a quarterback at number two, you go around the room and everybody's in agreement. This is the future quarterback. This is a guy that we should invest in because he's referring to teams, and there's a lot of teams in the NFL, John, that you could look. Check next to defense, have a solid defense. Check next to special teams. Check next to maybe even a running game, and then what's the missing link right now? Missing element is the quarterback position, and that's what's preventing them from either getting to the playoffs or it's preventing them from getting out of the wild card round. That's what holds you back, and that's what he wants to avoid. He doesn't want to have to deal with that. He wants stability once Eli Manning determines that he wants to hang up the jersey.
Victor, Florida, you're up next. Hi, Victor.
Good afternoon, Lance and John. I just want to make a few statements. Please don't interrupt me. Then you can give me your view after, okay?
It depends what you say, but go ahead. Yes.
First of all, the trade between Washington and Kansas City made the Giants better already because we can handle Alex Smith. We couldn't handle Kirk Cousins that well. Next. Please do not draft a quarterback with the second pick. If Eli, which I believe, has 2 to 3 good more years with a decent, not even great, offensive line, he can play real well for 2 to 3 years and give Webb more time to study and become better. Who knows? He might be the second Aaron Rodgers or somebody like that. So I will go for the best available player, and the best available player to me is Barkley. 230 pounds, he can run, he can block, he can catch, he can run back punts and kickoffs and everything else. So that's my view. Thank you for you taking my call. Now I'll let you do the talking.
All right. Thank you, Victor. Appreciate
the call. Thanks, man.
One, I think the Giants have actually handled Kirk Cousins fairly well. I think that's one of the teams he's actually struggled against, which is why I think some Giant fans maybe don't have as positive of an opinion on Cousins as some other people do because they probably haven't seen him play other teams. But he's actually struggled a bit against the Giants. But I agree. I mean, I don't think it helps the Giants that the Redskins are replacing Cousins with another good quarterback. You'd rather have him not have a good quarterback on their roster, for one. Number two on the draft pick, you touched on a couple different things there. Victor, what happens if when they take a look at the draft board, they believe that the quarterback there is the best available player? And I will say that, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. Folks, do not draft a player based on what you think you need in the next 2 seasons. The second overall pick can impact your franchise from anywhere, depending on the position you select, from 8 to 15 years. 15 years. Do not make that decision based on 2 or 3 seasons. That's going to bite you in the butt. And frankly, that's the point Gettleman makes.
Yeah.
You don't pick a player to fit what you need now. And do you think Packer fans regret wasting a first-round pick on Aaron Rodgers to have him sit behind Brett Favre for 3 seasons? Hell no. They're like, that was freaking genius. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, look, if they don't think one of these quarterbacks is the real deal, you don't pick them. That's fine. But if you do, you don't say, I'm not picking him because we have Eli for 2 or 3 more years. That's foolish. That's going to get you into trouble down the road. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you always want to build the bridge from one quarterback to another.
And it's hard to do.
It's very difficult.
It's like
to
the hardest thing to do in the NFL.
Yeah, but if you have an opportunity to do that 2 or 3 years before, and you could groom the kid while your established veteran is still here, that's like the icing on the cake. Brett Favre mentoring Aaron Rodgers, and then all of a sudden Rodgers ready to go. I'll bring up a relevant example, and I brought this up on the program the other day, John. Kansas City, which is now giving the keys to Patrick Mahomes, last year, you can make the argument, the Chiefs, they had Alex Smith. He was still under contract for at least 2 more years.
Yep.
What do they need? A quarterback. They're a playoff team. They could probably plug in somebody year one.
In fact, almost identical to the Eli situation, under contract for 2 more years.
Yeah,
same
so
deal.
Kansas City, I mean, pick any position. Pick another best player available under those circumstances.
And Lance, quite frankly, yeah, the Chiefs were closer to the playoffs during the draft last year than the Giants are this year.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not close.
Not even close. So I could have made an argument that Kansas City could have went any other direction. You know, as long as it's close in value to what they thought of Patrick Mahomes, and they chose Patrick Mahomes, and I'm sure Andy Reid and Kansas City is thinking Mahomes may sit for a year, he may sit for two, may sit for three, depending on what we do with Alex Smith. Okay, the process was accelerated a little, but Patrick Mahomes played one game last year, John. Played the final game of the regular season, and the only reason why he played the final game of the regular season is because Kansas City had nothing to play for. So they figured, all right, let's put Mahomes out there, let's see what he has. Things change all of a sudden in the offseason. They had an opportunity to get good value for Alex Smith, so now all of a sudden they're winding up going to start Patrick Mahomes. Similar circumstance happened with the Eagles. Eagles drafted Carson Wentz. Remember, Carson Wentz was not penciled in to be the starter. Let's not make it seem as if when the Eagles drafted him, he was going to be the starter.
Third-string quarterback.
Correct.
Behind Chase Daniels and behind Sam Bradford.
Sam Bradford, right. Yeah, they had Sam Bradford. They signed Chase Daniels. They gave him good money, by the way.
Like 4 years, $18 million, right?
Because,
or something like that.
Yeah. He had experience with Doug Peterson in Kansas City. And then what happens? Teddy Bridgewater goes down right before the season starts. Vikings now have the urgency. They want a quarterback. Vikings offer first-round pick for Sam Bradford. Doug Peterson's looking around at his staff. He's saying, oh, Wentz has looked pretty good, even though he got hurt, by the way, that training camp. Things change.
And the front office says,
yeah,
well, guess what? We just gave up a one to move up to get Cousins.
Correct.
So we're getting that
so
one back.
So now we're getting it back.
And by the way, on the other example, the Chiefs didn't only not just pick a quarterback. They traded assets to move up.
Correct. That's
to select a quarterback.
Yeah, that's why Buffalo has back-to-back first-rounders this year.
Yeah, the Chiefs don't pick in the first round this year, folks, because of Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
The Giants don't and that's the point Gettleman made, where teams then have to give up the house to move up to get the QB. The Giants are in a situation here where they don't got to do nothing.
Yeah.
They just got to sit there and pick the guy, again, if they believe in the player.
Right, yes. But to his point, he's saying, yeah, Eli may be good for another 2 to 3 years, but then if we solidify the quarterback position, we don't have to worry about are we going to be in the number two overall pick 3 or 4 years down the road. We don't have to worry about moving assets, making a trade, signing a free agent. That's how he's going to think, as well as the scouting department, if they want to go in the direction of a QB.
201-939-4513. Christian is in New York. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. As far as taking the quarterback, if they do believe in one of them completely, I feel like they do have to take him, because if you want to wait 2 years, you're probably not going to be 2-4 or 3-13 again. You're probably going to have to spend all sorts of assets on getting that quarterback the way teams did this last draft. And I actually heard a lot of reports that the Giants tried to trade up for Mahomes last year.
You know, I heard that out there too. I never thought there was anything to that, to be honest with you. I never heard that in the building, Christian. I heard the same noise you did. But to me, I don't know. That one never registered on the truth meter to me. That seemed more like a rumor than it was a fact. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I could see why the team would never talk about that themselves. But I could see why he chased Alex Smith out of Kansas City, because he has so much more ability to throw a deep ball. And
I don't know about that, Christian. Alex Smith, I thought they opened up the playbook this year.
This year he did, for sure.
Yeah,
I thought he
was very effective with the deep ball. I think it comes down to the fact that Alex Smith had 1 year remaining on his contract, got a really good offer from the Washington Redskins.
And apparently multiple teams were in the
correct
mix there.
Cleveland wanted him, which makes sense. John Dorsey's now the GM, was with Kansas City.
Which is probably why they were able to get so much, because they were playing teams' offers against each other.
Yeah, I don't think it was Andy Reid all of a sudden did not think Alex Smith was good. Andy Reid also traded Donovan McNabb, so he has a track record of moving on from veteran quarterbacks when he thinks he can get good value. And they had a young quarterback.
And that's it. Christian, I think Lance hit it on the head. And it goes back to my point that I made about the Eagles and Roseman and Bradford. The Chiefs were short a draft pick this year. They lost their number one pick to acquire Mahomes. So by then trading Smith now, and honestly, I bet you if you put the truth serum in Andy Reid, if you take everything out of consideration and just talk about the actual play of the quarterbacks, Alex Smith's going to be a better quarterback this year than Patrick Mahomes, I bet.
And I'm pretty sure about that.
But the fact that you could get a third rounder, you could get Kendall Fuller in the deal now instead of losing him for nothing, that's why that made so much sense for the Chiefs organization.
Well, and we'll let you continue, Christian, but anybody who wants to say that the Chiefs blew that lead against Tennessee this year because of Alex Smith's play did not watch that football game. Alex Smith played tremendous
football.
Well,
he was fine.
They had drops. They were not nearly as aggressive in running the football in the second half.
And the defense was poor.
So, once again, if you think that now Alex Smith's out, Patrick Mahomes in, and then all of a sudden Kansas City's issues go out the window, then once again, I don't think you've watched the Chiefs long enough. Go ahead, Christian.
Well, yeah, I mean, Alex Smith will be more efficient than Pat Mahomes this year. But it's funny because I can't think of the last time I saw Alex Smith win a game without a good defense. Probably many, many years ago. And basically Jim Harbaugh just taught him, listen, like, you play for a team with a fantastic defense now, just don't turn it over.
Hey, Christian.
Like, well,
you could say that about most quarterbacks, though.
Well, Christian, I have a question for you. Can you tell me, in total defense and in points, where the Chiefs' defense ranked this year?
Oh, I know that they definitely didn't have the kind of year that they usually do.
So, I can tell you lost their best player, Eric Berry, in week one.
The Chiefs this year defensively, in terms of yards allowed per game, were the fifth worst team in football. In terms of points allowed per game, the Chiefs ranked right in the middle of the league. They're around 17th. So the Chiefs' defense was nowhere near good this year. And look, in the years past, was he check down Alex, not making mistakes and all that stuff? Yes. This year, he threw the ball down the field a lot more than he did in years past.
And he definitely did. And it's like, you know, the first year that he gets Tyreek Hill for a full season is the first year he gets 4,000 yards.
Well, of course.
It's like, you know, Tyreek Hill is obviously one of the fastest people in the league, and Alex Smith can feel a lot safer about his deep throw that's not necessarily the greatest. I mean, it's really not that great, honestly.
Well, like, but I would also argue, Christian, that I don't think Kansas City surrounded him with great talent during the course of his tenure at the wide receiver position. If you remember, there was one season, I don't know whether it was 2 or 3 years ago, the Chiefs had no touchdown passes to a wide receiver the entire year. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jeremy Maclin had been in and out of the lineup. He was banged up. You know, Chris Conley's flashed here or there. It's not as if Kansas City's made a home run, you know, outside of a Tyreek Hill. They've relied on their running game. That's been the identity of the team. They established the offensive line, and they've been a good defensive-minded team. And go back to his San Francisco tenure, Christian. Solid defense with Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator.
Great defense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Frank Gore was the running back. Great running game. Who were his wide receivers? I mean, Vernon Davis, you could argue, was his best target. I know Michael Crabtree was there, but Michael Crabtree wasn't the consistent guy that we saw with the Raiders over the last 2 years. I mean, I'm not trying to build a whole defense mechanism here for Alex Smith, but I think people need to look at the facts and realize that.
You love Alex Smith.
Well, I like Alex Smith, I like Kirk Cousins, because right. I don't think these guys get enough credit. Because everybody wants to go for the elite quarterback. We're fascinated and obsessed with labeling a guy elite when, to your point, I'm not hammering this home at you, Christian, You find me a quarterback in the NFL that has gone on to win a Super Bowl when he hasn't had a defense, hasn't had a receiving corps, and hasn't had a running game.
So or an offensive line.
To say Alex Smith is unique, I mean, and has only benefited when he's had those facets, who else has been able to overcome all of those issues and go on to win?
And then, Christian, I think if I was having this conversation with you 2 years ago, I think me and you would probably be more on the same page. Because I agree, when Smith was in San Francisco, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot. His first year or so in Kansas City wasn't asked to do a whole lot. But I think in the last year or so, he has become a much, much better quarterback. You realize he was sixth in the NFL this year, behind only Garoppolo, Watson, I'm sorry, fifth. The only four quarterbacks that averaged more yards per attempt than he did were Jimmy Garoppolo, Deshaun Watson, Drew Brees, and Jared Goff. So he was throwing it, man. Yeah. I mean, this year was different. He was putting the ball down the field, and he played really well this year as quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember the first five games of the season, he looked like the best one of the bunch.
Yeah, and they started off 5-0.
Yeah, and then he went through a really bad stretch middle of the year like the rest of the team did. But then the last four or five games, he played really well again.
Yeah, and he just, you know, he definitely is one of those guys who is, I consider decent and can have good stretches of play. But, you know, for his whole career at Kansas City, he had pretty much everything around him. And just really made it very far. And
yeah, but Christian,
you know,
we just went through it. Until this season, he did not have, or until this year and last, they had terrible weapons on offense. Travis Kelce wasn't there. They had no wide receivers. And Jamaal Charles was hurt for a couple of years.
I mean, that's what I said. I don't think they've surrounded him with, I mean, let's not make it sound like he's been having Pro Bowl talent to throw the ball to.
This year, yes. But before that, no.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely didn't have great receivers. I feel like he hit Michael Crabtree a little bit and just never really gave him even a chance to get going the way he did in Oakland. And, you know, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
But he doesn't seem to maximize receivers. Like Eli can get some touchdowns to some no-name guys. And, you know, just I feel like most quarterbacks are able to do that. And the fact that he didn't throw a touchdown to a receiver in a whole season, I feel like says a lot about him, because there has to be some windows there.
Well, but again, Christian, I said, if this was 3 or 4 years ago, I think I'd be more on the same page as you. But I think he's proven himself to be a better player than that in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, like this year, I definitely give him more credit for going deeper. But overall, I feel like him versus Kirk Cousins, I'm pretty happy about this, because I just feel like Kirk has more of a balanced overall skill set.
No, I agree, and if I had to pick between the two, I would pick Kirk Cousins over Alex Smith. I agree with you.
Well, listen, Alex Smith has a strong arm. You know, don't think that he's walking into Washington and Jake Gruden's like, yeah, go ahead, throw 5-yard passes for the entire season. That's not happening. That's fantasy land. And remember, a lot of tapping into the potential that you're referring to, Christian, is the coaching philosophy and what their game plan is. And, you know, what Andy Reid asked Alex Smith to do, what Jim Harbaugh asked Alex Smith to do, is not necessarily the same thing that what Jay Gruden is going to ask Alex Smith to do. You know, let's see what Washington does with its running game. A lot of question marks. They went through about 4 or 5 different running backs this season. Their offensive line was plagued by injuries. So I don't know what Washington's going to look like this season. Terrell Pryor is probably not going to be back. They're going to have some changes to the receiving corps. There are a lot of question marks in Washington. The way the team looks right now could be very different than how we're going to view and look at that team a few months from now.
Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the call, buddy. And I think the larger point Lance is making, we got 10 more minutes. We got 3 calls. I'll make sure we get you all in. I think a lot of times some of these quarterbacks are really of equal skill level or similar skill level, but some are in better situations, so people automatically think that they're better. Like, all I had was people yesterday when I made a point that someone's going to get a good quarterback in Cousins were screaming at me, he's never won a big game. He's never won a big game. The guy's played 3 seasons, and he won a division
in a
year where he beat both the Eagles and the Cowboys at the end of the year to win the division. So,
and he won the game in Philly.
I know.
Second to last week of the season.
4 touchdowns in that game. So, I mean, I can't, you know, everyone thought Matt Ryan stunk until he got better players around, and then all of a sudden he's going to Super Bowls. How many times do we get people killing Matt Ryan on the show that he can't win a big game?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden he puts up 26 on the Patriots in three quarters, and somehow people still manage to blame him for not converting one third down in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. All of a sudden the game's his fault. But I think, you know, like a guy like Matt Stafford, you know, he just hasn't had enough talent around him to
had no running game
to win big at the pros. But I think, you know, could Kirk Cousins do what Matt Ryan did last year if he had the right talent around him? I think he could. Could Matt Stafford do that? I think he could. I think it's possible. But again, you have to get the right talent around you. A team's record is not solely determined. I know this is your pet peeve. The team's record is not solely determined by the quarterback.
There's one record I can't stand. It's quarterback records. Please, don't even bring that up.
I know
you do.
My
God. Well, it's funny because what they were throwing out, and I don't know what the record is now. Every time Kirk Cousins and the Redskins would play on Monday Night Football, Kirk Cousins is 0-8 on Monday Night Football. Really? Last time I checked, the Redskins are 0-8 on Monday Night Football. No, but it's Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, that's a ridiculous record. But why do we even have to discuss this when there's ample evidence internally? Have we not witnessed what Eli Manning has dealt with over the course of his career? And don't people realize what he can do when he has talent and what he has to deal with when he has a banged-up receiving core and issues on the offensive line? So why do we even have to go with Matthew Stafford, John? I mean, I'm not calling out Giants fans, but if you have evidence internally, why do we even have to make cases outside of the Giants? Why do we have to do it?
I mean, and it's amazing how it flips. You remember this well. 3 or 4 years ago, people were calling us up, killing Eli Manning, and me and you were sitting here, and we got yelled at for this by various people, that he was struggling because of the offensive line, and the offensive line had issues, and people got mad at us. Then this year, we're saying, you know, Eli Manning, again, no receivers, offensive line, he's struggling a little bit. Yes, the talent around the quarterback matters. There's ample evidence. Were Eli's numbers down this year because of Eli Manning? No. They were down because he had injuries all over the place. At wide receiver, on the offensive line, they were everywhere. The quarterback is affected by what's going on around him. It's a game.
And nobody's the exception.
There's 11 players on the field against 11. It's not 1 on 11. It's 11 on 11. And if one guy screws up, it ruins the whole play. Literally. This isn't the NBA where you, on a final possession of a game, can hand the ball to one player and tell him to go, you know, make a play and hit a shot.
There
doesn't work that way.
Hey,
damn it.
You opened up Pandora's box. There is one player that comes to mind. That can do that.
It does.
No, but I agree with you. Here's another example. The Patriots beat the Jaguars. Tom Brady is arguably one of the greatest to ever play the game. I'm not interested in having a debate. Danny Amendola, the play he made for the ultimate game-winning touchdown.
Oh, jumping in the back of the end zone?
Well, listen, Brady made a great throw.
Unbelievable catch.
But doesn't Amendola deserve some credit in terms of getting both feet in, going up to make sure that he secures the football? So Brady did that all by himself, right?
How about the Tyree catch?
Well, of course.
Come on.
That's my point.
That was a prayer. Yeah. Eli threw up a prayer that got brought down
and
in a miracle
guy
catch.
Helped make him look good.
And he won the MVP for the game.
Yeah. You need help.
You need help. Everybody needs help. It's not solely to Kirk Cousins. It's not solely to Eli Manning. Look, and are there some guys that are better at overcoming less talent around them than others? Absolutely. Is Tom Brady one of those guys? Absolutely. Is Aaron Rodgers one of those guys? Absolutely. But when it comes to most of the other quarterbacks in the league, in that group below those ridiculously top-tier elite guys, they all need help. Every single one of them. And even a guy like Tom Brady needs help.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, maybe a little bit less, but he needs it. Aaron Rodgers, maybe he needs a little bit less help, but he still needs it. Anyway, I want to make sure we get the calls in.
Well, this is a great guy to go to after that.
Well, he wants to talk about the catch rule, though. Charlie, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys. Hey, you know who else needs help? Hosts on talk shows, they need help from the fans calling in.
Yeah, including yourself. You're 100% right. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Yes.
Hey, I don't know. The thing, I got two things. I've talked about that, the catch rule, but first of all, look, when you pick a quarterback really high, like Kansas City did, there, and you give up draft picks to get this guy, there is a big pressure to get this guy on the field.
I agree with that.
You know,
that's
fair. Maybe they can sit for 1 year, but they ain't going to sit much longer than that. That's why Smith is gone. And the same thing, if Eli, if we pick a quarterback at number two, maybe the guy is going to sit for the year, unless we have an awful year, which I don't think we will. Then next year, they're going to be pushing Eli out because they're going to want this guy to play. Now, the only reason Rodgers sat for 3 years, you had a legend in Brett Favre. That's why they didn't kick him out that first year.
Yeah, but Charlie, but if the guy you pick is so...
They tried to get rid of Favre, you know, the whole time.
Right, but
they didn't want him there.
But Charlie, if the player is so good that he should play, isn't that a good thing?
Yeah, but it isn't a good thing if you've got a player, like you said. I mean, Smith would play better in Kansas City this season coming up than this rookie's going to play.
Yeah, but you're sacrificing one season for 12 seasons after that.
Yeah, maybe, unless the guy's he's going to, you know, be a bust.
Yeah, but if he's a bust, then, but if he's a bust.
You won't know that until he plays.
But if he's a bust, I would like to think over a year of preseason and practice and things like that, you'd know if you think he is ready to step in for Eli. Obviously, the Chiefs thought that Mahomes was ready to step in for Smith.
Practice,
no,
yeah.
I understand what they thought, but I'm just saying that when you pick somebody that high, there's a lot of pressure to play the dude.
Absolutely. Agreed.
That's fair.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, about the catch rule. This is the most insane rule in any pro sport in the history of pro sports. It's the dumbest rule. Look, if you catch the ball inbounds and you got 2 feet in, I don't care if you're 20 feet or 30 feet out of bounds and you drop the ball, then it's not a catch. That is insanity.
Yeah, but Charlie, Charlie.
No, wait a minute. Let me say one more thing. And
go ahead.
When you're in the end zone, when you're in the red zone, and you catch the ball and you got 2 feet that goes over the line, the imaginary line, and it's a touchdown. Period. I don't care if he fumbles the ball when he's going out of bounds.
Charlie, number one.
Once he gets his feet in, it should be the same rule as any other, like a running back crossing line.
Charlie, look, the rule has to be the same everywhere, okay? That's number one. The rule in the end zone's got to be the same as the rule on the sideline. It's got to be the same as the rule in the middle of the field. What constitutes possession has to be a constant throughout the entire game and the entire sport. That's number one. The reason it's not the same as a running back is because the receiver has not yet acquired possession of the ball. So that's why it's not just 2 feet down. If you want to make the rule 2 feet down equals possession, do you know how many fumbles you're going to have of receivers catching the ball, getting 2 feet down, getting whacked by a safety or a DB in the middle of the field, dropping it? That's called an incomplete pass now. If you want to make that the rule where it's just 2 feet down equals possession, you're going to have probably at least one or two extra fumbles per game.
That's fine.
There's a lot of bang-bang plays, Charlie, in the NFL.
That is a catch. That is a catch. They overthink this. Why are they trying to make it so darn complicated? Look, it's when a guy's in the red zone and he catches the ball and he's got 2 feet in, he's over the line, it's a touchdown. I don't care if he fumbles it the second later or if he tumbles out of bounds, 50 yards out of bounds, and he drops it. That's insane. That's why fans can't stand the rule. It's an insane rule, and they need to change the rule.
Well, fans, once again, Charlie, fans can't understand it when it goes against their team, okay?
No,
Let's at least look at it from a big picture perspective.
I'm saying any team, man.
I'm not just saying Giants fans. I'm talking about any team. I agree with you. Fans of any team can't understand the rule when it goes against their team.
It's an insane rule. Listen, you know where I stand.
I said that at the beginning of the show, and I agree with John.
Thanks for the call, Charlie.
What you're arguing, Charlie, is you can't have the rule one way when you're in the end zone and then have it another way when you're in the middle of the field. You can't.
Possession's possession.
Yeah,
what constitutes
you have
a catch?
To have consistency.
Yes.
Now, John, if they wanted to go back and treat runners and receivers the same way, which is a part of this debate, you know, that's something they could at least discuss. But to your point, there's a lot of bang-bang plays, and I think that's going to result in a lot more turnovers, and then fans are going to be even more frustrated because they're going to look at the replay, and they're going to be like, the guy didn't even turn around, and he coughed up the football. Oh, no longer it's an incomplete pass. So all of a sudden, it's a quick turn, it's a catch, and it's a fumble.
And by the way, you know,
I don't think you're going to be pleased with that.
You know what else that's going to do? that's going to make players want to blow up receivers after they catch the ball even more.
Because there's incentive now.
Because that's and that's going to turn into a player safety issue. Because people are going to want to create turnovers by annihilating wide receivers after they catch it. And then that also changes then, well, what's a defenseless receiver? If he has possession of the ball and he's now can make a play, why is he defenseless? Those two things are linked.
No, and that's part of the reason.
Yeah.
You're right, that the rule is that you have to turn, make sort of a football move. I know the language has changed in terms of football move, but...
Make yourself a runner.
Make yourself a runner. Correct. Establish yourself a runner. Part of that is, you're right, because of the defenseless receiver angle. So
all
now,
these all things
sudden,
are linked.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. If you sit down and you understand, yes, it's convoluted. I agree with every fan who says it's convoluted. But if you go through the written rules... I think it adds up as it stands right now.
And now I do think maybe they've over-officiated from the replay booth maybe and turned over some plays that I don't think were as clear and obvious as you might like. I think maybe that has happened at times this year. But I think there is a pretty firm red line in the rule book as to where a catch becomes incomplete or stays a catch. Final call of the show is our buddy Steve in D.C. Steve, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
We're great, Steve. How are you? Hopefully you had having
good,
a good New Year.
Good. Listen, I'm not going to call no names, even though it wasn't my good friend Charlie, but some people just stick to their opinion rather than spit out some facts that are just non-existent facts, man.
What are you talking about?
Well, Kristen, the caller Kristen, I don't even know what he's talking about. I mean, you know, he's so blind by, you know, the disdain for Alex Smith and
he's a good caller.
And my man from Kirk Cousins, I don't know. I just the assessment just kind of blew my mind because both of these guys had one of the best QBRs and turned the ball over at least in the league.
Yeah.
And I'm not crowning either one of these guys, but I just think Giants fans just be tripping sometimes. He's a good quarterback.
Well, Steve, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Real simply, I'll put it this way, and I was saving this up. I'm going to use it now. If Giant fans think Eli Manning has been a good regular season quarterback over his career, then Kirk Cousins and Alex Smith must also be really good regular season quarterbacks because in some years their numbers are better than Eli's, and others they're very comparable. So there you go.
Exactly, and that's being conservative. But listen, these guys are good quarterbacks. I think I'm actually glad Cousins is gone. I don't know, for whatever reason, Kirk Cousins, he made me nervous. He just seemed like he had a little bit more poise, like he was more likely to come back on you.
Hey, he was a playmaker, man. He was a playmaker.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was a good player. I'm glad to see him gone. And Alex Smith is still a very solid quarterback, and so – we still got our hands full out there, but let's talk about what I love the most, which is this Giants. And I just can't even believe that some people, I won't name no names because a good friend of mine, but we got to do the responsible thing. We got to pick a quarterback. It's all about the future, and the future is now.
Now, Steve, if you believe in one of these guys, I agree with you. But if Dave Gettleman and Shermer both look at these guys and neither one. Or like, well, we really think this guy's the next big thing, then I don't have a problem passing on one.
Me either, John. But I don't want to move down. I'd rather just pick Barkley because we know what he can do, even though I'm not big on that. But I don't want to get cute. I don't want to move down. I certainly don't want to pick a quarterback that they don't believe in. But here's what concerns me.
Okay.
I really feel like, Shermer, even though he's been around for a while, I just really feel like he might do a PR decision and may not pick a quarterback because of some blind fans are afraid they might, want to have this guy's head on a stick because he just got here. They look at it as an indictment on Eli, which I don't, because Father Time is undefeated. But I know some of these Giants fans just go crazy when you even think about another quarterback other than Eli. And that scares me. I really feel like he might make a PR decision
and not
go with a quarterback.
Steve, allow me to put your fears at rest. If there's one thing I know about Dave Gettleman, it's this. He doesn't give a damn. look what he did. I'm serious. Look what he did with Steve Smith in Carolina.
Unpopular
that
move.
Guy was a legend
there.
What about
there? Josh Norman, too? Norman's another one.
And he let him go without blinking an eye because he thought it was the best thing for the organization. I promise you, with every fiber of my being, I give you my personal guarantee, Dave Gettleman will not pass on a quarterback because he thinks picking one is going to make fans angry. I promise you that will never happen in a bajillion years.
And he's also not going to be fearful, Steve. Hold on. He's also not going to be fearful of insulting a player.
No.
In terms of shying away from drafting another
player. It's a big boy league, Steve.
Well, exactly. So,
man, I know, but here's the thing. You know, I'm not worried about Gettleman. I'm really worried about the ownership, really, because I really felt like they kind of backtracked, you know, and I hate to say, I know y'all want to get to it, but I'm really worried about what might happen. I'll go past that, and I just want to say this. To all my fellow fans, here's why. Look, you got to embrace the suck. We sucked last year, so that means you got to capitalize on it and get the value at that pick. And the value is not necessarily a running back that – we definitely could use because he's so dominant, but we don't need. We still got, that's why we need linebackers and defensive ends, but we got to get this line together and give Godwin a chance. And I really believe with Shermer on this team, we are the playoff team that we should have been last year. So that's all I got to say. I love my fans, and I love Big Blue, and I look forward to the future. But the future is now, guys, so got to embrace it. I know some of you guys are young. This is not going to be my first quarterback regime change. But Eli's still going to
be your first rodeo, Steve.
Let's
absolutely,
Steve. We love you too, buddy. Appreciate
It's not your first rodeo. You've been around the block a few times, Steve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys have a good one. Great show. Thanks.
You as well.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. Hey, look, and that's the thing. Look, we're not going to start a whole conversation about what they should do with the second pick, but look, you got it. You got to. He's right. You got to take advantage of the fact that you were bad last year and get maximum value out of that second pick in the draft, whatever you do with it.
You have to capitalize. The one thing real quickly I'll add is that don't assume that Barkley is going to be there at number two. I think everybody's operating under that. Kirk Cousins, if he signs with the Browns, that changes Cleveland's philosophy.
That's a good point.
Cleveland also could say, John, we take Barkley number one. We like the three or four prospects at quarterback. We take our quarterback at number four. All I'm saying is I could see other hypotheticals playing out.
It's not impossible that he's
where Barkley could very well be off the board.
Fair. Thanks for joining us. Great show, everybody. Spirited conversation, spirited talk. We had fun. Hope you did too. Fiegels and I tomorrow. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com as we celebrate 10 years since 2007. Check out all that content on the website. Where are they nows and other retrospectives. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Adios.
Have a good one.